from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University. Online at wvu.edu.
At the legislature today, it's crossover day at the State House, the last day lawmakers can vote on bills originating in their chambers. Votes on tax reform legislation sparked debate in the Senate, while in the House, they voted on new education and substance abuse laws. With just 10 days left in the regular session, legislative leaders are running up on their deadline to pass a budget bill. We check in with a representative of the governor's office about the progress of negotiations. Coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Governor Jim Justice has vetoed his first piece of legislation this session. The governor vetoed Senate Bill 330 yesterday. The bill was an attempt to clarify some language in the state's right-to-work law, which was approved by lawmakers in the 2016 session. Since the law has been legally challenged and was recently ruled unconstitutional by a Kanawha County judge, it will soon be heard by the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals. In his veto message, the governor said changing the statute before that Supreme Court decision would be, quote, imprudent and contrary to public policy, end quote. It takes just a simple majority vote of both chambers to override the veto. Senators have approved their version of a bill to drastically restructure the state's tax system, one day after delegates killed their iteration of the same measure. The Senate bill makes changes to the state's sales and personal income taxes, and while it shows an initial fix to the state's budget hole in 2018, it could cause deficits in the following years. Senate Bill 409 is one of two tax reform bills studied in the state's upper chamber this session and took many different forms. Ultimately, the bill put to a vote Wednesday would increase the state's sales tax from 6% to 7% in October of this year. At the same time, it reinstates a 3.5% tax on groceries. It also gets rid of a number of sales tax exemptions, including cell phones, solid waste disposal, haircuts and manicures, gym memberships, and travel agent services. And it decreases the coal severance tax rate. The bill creates three new personal income tax brackets, lowering the tax rates across all income levels. It stipulates that in any year when the consumer sales tax brings in $50 million over the $1.8 billion mark in revenue, all of the income tax rates will decrease by 0.1%. That's if the state's rainy day fund contains more than 15% of the general revenue budget. Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall says he still has concerns about the bill, particularly because it allows lawmakers to balance the 2018 budget but shows deficits in future years. Hall says, though, this is not the final version of the legislation.
Our rule says that after today, the only bills that we can pass as an originating body would be the budget bill, bills relating to salaries, like the salary bill we have in our possession, and special appropriations. So after today, if we don't take action and move a bill to the House that's got the potential for revenue in dealing with our budget, which is what this does, and should it die here, there is one other bill on our calendar which was dealt with yesterday in the House and it failed, then we would be left, Mr. President, without the potential at all in this session, either House, for a revenue measure at all.
Hall says his yes vote for the bill is a procedural one that gives lawmakers a, quote, vehicle to increase the revenues they need to balance the budget. Many Democratic members of the chamber disagreed, including Senator Corey Palumbo.
I do acknowledge it is a vehicle to help with the budget, but I would say it's a broken down junk vehicle. And we should use a better vehicle to handle our budget situation. I mean, my concern with this bill every step of the way was that we were shifting tax burden from the upper income wealthy to the middle income and lower income people. And every time this bill came up in the committee, I asked our experts who were in committee to take that thought out of my mind, convince me that that thought was incorrect, and they never did. They never did, because even though we've never got good numbers on what this would do to people in different income brackets, the experts that came before our committee, I think, believed that the net effect of this bill was going to be to shift tax burden from upper income people to middle and lower income people. And that's not the tax reform that I think is right for the people of this state.
Democratic Senator Bob Plymel pointed to the process by which members of both the Select Committee on Tax Reform and the Finance Committee considered the legislation, saying sometimes members were asked to vote on amendments or the bill itself without knowing its true financial impact.
I really don't know what reiteration of this bill it is, but let me just call it Carnage 7, because I think it is about to the seventh reiteration of a bill. In the second bill, the first bill was so bad, we wouldn't even take it up. Now we've gone through a whole process, and if we're going to say this is the vehicle for us to be able to get what we should have already been doing, what we've already should have gone through our process in the Senate, and this is going to be our vehicle, then we've gone a long way south in the way that we used to run this place.
Senate Majority Leader Ryan Ferns responded.
I will agree that this, throughout this process, this piece of legislation has changed multiple times. I think that's appropriate. I think it should have changed multiple times. As we receive feedback from the various entities and groups that will be affected by it, and I commend the chairman of the Tax Reform Committee for his tireless efforts on trying to perfect this piece of legislation. And I just want to remind everybody what we heard over the course of those 18 months, for anybody that wasn't on the Select Committee on Tax Reform, time and time again, was that reducing the income tax is the single greatest driver from a tax policy standpoint for economic growth. If you read national articles from around the country, the states who are succeeding are the ones that have taken this path.
The bill was approved on a 22-12 vote, but not along party lines. Democratic Senator Richard Ojeda joined Republicans voting in favor of the bill. Republican Senator Patricia Rucker joined Democrats in voting against it. The bill now heads to the House of Delegates for its consideration. Delegates have once again delayed consideration of their version of a tax reform law. House Bill 2933 is on third reading in the chamber with several amendments pending, but may not be put to a vote tonight. The bill would reinstate a 3% tax on food in October of this year and would get rid of a number of exemptions in the current sales tax. In July of next year, the bill would decrease that sales tax from 6 to 5%. It also implements an across-the-board 5.1% personal income tax. House Majority Leader Darrell Coles said earlier today he supports the measure.
It's a concept of broadening the tax base and lowering the rate for everybody. Although there's some disagreement or some conversations about what services should be in there as taxable in the sales tax, the whole idea is that it's fairer, flatter for everybody if we include more services, and if we lower the rate for everybody, every service, every product you buy at the point of sale, that will be a tax break for everyone. So I think it's just the concept of a broader base and a lower tax rate for everybody is good for a healthy, growing economy. I do believe there will be some challenges on some of those amendments and final passage. So we'll just have to work through it and see if we can't come to a point of consensus and compromise with our colleagues.
House Bill 2933 is scheduled to be voted on tonight in the House. The bill is one of several making its way through the legislative process that lawmakers are counting on to balance their respective budgets. Meanwhile, many of those same lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are in talks with Governor Jim Justice about how to close a budget gap millions of dollars wide. Joining me to discuss those talks is Jason Pizzatella. He's Governor Justice's Deputy Chief of Staff. Jason, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Ashton. Good to be with you again.
House leaders met with your Chief of Staff, Nick Casey, this afternoon. I know you were in on this meeting. They met yesterday. Where are we in the process of getting to a budget negotiation?
Incremental progress. I think there are a lot of areas of common ground across both sides of the aisle, across both houses, that people agree on. It's just a matter of getting a concrete proposal on such short time for the delegates and senators to consider, think about before they cast a final vote, given the importance, obviously, of whatever compromise that has come up with to our budget process.
Now, and there was a little bit of controversy on the Senate floor yesterday when I think John Unger was questioning the majority leader, Ryan Ferns, and said, well, House Republicans have met with the governor. House and Senate Democrats have met with the governor, and Senate Republicans haven't. And Ryan Ferns' response was, we were never invited. Does Governor Justice not want to speak with Senate Republicans?
No, he certainly does. He knows who has the majority of votes in that chamber. The governor has met with the president and the finance chairman on the Senate side, both a majority and minority leaders, and the discussion has been cordial, and it will continue to be cordial because I think we're all here after the same common goal, and that is a balanced budget, but not just a balanced budget just for the sake of balancing numbers on a counting form. The governor wants a budget that will allow us to make proper investments in West Virginia where we want to make them. And I think Senate and House leaders do too. It's just a matter of how we get to that final bottom line. The paths have diverged a little bit, and we just have to do what we can to bring them together.
Now, in both chambers this week, there have been amendments, or at least they tried amendments, to certain tax bills that the governor had proposed. The governor, of course, proposed a half a cent on a sales tax and that commercial activities tax. Delegate Butler attempted to amend it into a bill in the House. And then I believe Senator Ferns attempted to do it in the Senate, and everyone voted against them. So now Democrats are on the board as voting against these tax increases. But the governor doesn't seem to see any other way. Has Governor Justice changed his mind? Is the Democratic Party going in a different direction?
No, we think yesterday's vote was largely symbolic. I think the Democratic leaders understand the negotiations are taking place. I think exactly what was the potential amendment yesterday on the Senate floor wasn't even accurately reflective of what the governor wanted to do tax-wise. So I think the vote was largely symbolic. I think the majority leader made an excellent point in the sense that that all of the topics of discussion with respect to the budget ought to be considered and voted up or down. And I think that at the end of the day, we'll have a plan for both House and Senate leaders to take to their respective caucuses and vote for that everyone can be proud of.
Now, when the House and Senate Republicans released their budget framework earlier in the month, they said they would have a budget done by day 60. That was their plan. Governor Justice has introduced a bill limiting lawmakers to 5 days of pay should we need a special session on the budget. Does that mean that there's pressure to get it done more quickly? Are we even in a place where we can get it done as soon as 5 days after the regular session?
Yes, I think we are. Ashton, I think at the bottom, or at the end of the day, I think if you asked all 134 members of the legislature to cast a vote on a budget framework between now and, let's say, day 65, 60 plus 5 days extended, I think that that you would get a majority vote on both sides. Obviously, the governor's preference is to not have an extended session past those 5 or 6 days and to avoid a repeat of last year, where lawmakers took some time to think about things and came back in the summer and really pushed towards the end of the fiscal year. We're trying to avoid that. I think the president and the speaker and both minority leaders want to avoid that too. And so that's why really at day 47, 48, negotiations between both sides of the aisle on both houses really kicked into high gear.
So I want to ask you about two of the governor's bills that were actually approved in the Senate today. And the first of those is a furlough bill, which, of course, Governor Tomlin presented to lawmakers during that special budget session last year. Talk to me about what the governor's bill does.
We hope we never have to use that bill. The way the chapter of the code dealing with personnel laws is currently written, it really hasn't been amended since the early 80s. And it's very restrictive in the sense that if the state is in a situation where there isn't a budget enacted, and the auditor is not able to pay salaries, the only result for the executive branch would be termination of those employees. That would cause a cascading effect with respect to employee benefits, retirement, health care, that it would take us months, if not years, to climb out of. This furlough bill, which again we hope we never have to use, would just allow a temporary pause so that there are no gap in service. And if on June 30th no budget is enacted, and employees have to take a day or two or a week of unpaid time off until budget is enacted, it won't affect their longevity with the state.
And it'll also make sure that they keep their health insurance in place, correct?
That's right. That's right.
So then the Senate also passed a bill today dealing with the Parkways Authority, with bonds and this single fee system for people who buy easy passes. Talk to us about what that bill does.
It really was a cornerstone of the governor's state of the state proposal to help launch these 48,000 new jobs that he's talking about. The bill really does a few things. One, it makes the tolls on the turnpike permanent. It takes away that 2019 deadline that's kind of been hanging over everyone's head the last couple of years. The other thing that it does is it allows the Parkways Authority as an agency to spend money in partnership with the Department of Transportation in areas outside the four counties where the turnpike currently traverses, which is under current law is not possible. And the other thing that the bill does is it allows the Parkways Authority to act as a funding mechanism to issue a revenue bond that's backed by toll revenue to be used not only in those four counties, but also statewide. It's a very important piece of legislation that amends a set chapter of the code that hasn't been touched in a while.
And that bill, again, was approved in the Senate today and now goes over to the House. Jason Pizzutella, Governor Justice's Deputy Chief of Staff, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Ashton.
We look at more bills approved by the House and Senate today in just a moment. But first, we meet three more members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature.
Charles Trump was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2014. A Republican, he is from Morgan County. Senator Trump represents the 15th Senatorial District and is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Trump previously served as a member of the House of Delegates from 1992 through 2004. During that time, he served three terms as the minority leader. Alan Evans is a Republican representing the House's 54th District. Evans is from Grant County. He was elected to the House in 1990 and serves as the agricultural chair of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Isaac Spinoggle represents the state's 55th House of Delegates District from Pendleton County. A Democrat, Spinoggle was elected to the House in 2012. In that same year, he was named Pendleton County's Outstanding Democrat of the Year.
Senators voted down a bill today that would have removed the state's helmet law for motorcyclists. The negotiated bill would have removed the helmet requirement for people over the age of 21 if they have a legal license and health insurance. Here's a look at some of the debate over the bill on the floor today.
When it comes to the unfunded medical bills and expenses that come along with a head injury from somebody riding out there, they're in a horrible accident, and they sustain major head injuries. So freedom is not free. Freedom has a price, and that price will be borne out by the citizens, the taxpayers of our state.
It's easy to find a reason to be against something that you don't do yourself. I haven't seen too many of the motorcycle riders in this body stand up and talk against it. The point is, if you want to wear a helmet, wear it. But this isn't the big issue here, folks. The big issue is taking of rights, personal rights.
I know that the risk on that bike is much greater that somebody driving a little blue Prius might not be paying attention and could possibly run out and hit me. It is my responsibility at that point in time to know that can happen. Every time we climb onto a bike, we know that that's the risk. If the real concern let's have the vote on eliminating motorcycles. This bill does not require you not to wear a helmet. That's the clarity of what we're missing here. It's telling you you may choose not to wear a helmet if you're 21 years or older.
We cannot prevent people from making dumb decisions. And one of the duties as a legislator and as citizens is to allow people to live their lives doing what they think is best, not necessarily prohibiting everything that could possibly hurt you. And I do believe that people do have that right.
And as far as it being a personal freedom, I think that's great. But then let's treat all of those the same way. You have to wear a hard hat on the job. Let's do away with that. Coal miners have to wear a hard hat in the mine. Let's do away with that. And above all, West Virginia has a seatbelt law. Let's do away with that.
But what I'm more concerned about, and I think most of us have family members, we all have, most of us have children. You go tuck them in, you kiss them goodnight. You go down, you flip on the news, and you see a big motorcycle crash with another guy dead. And what I think about is the little girls and boys that are laying there in their beds, and they don't have a mom and dad anymore because they decided, because of this helmet law, because we have encouraged, you certainly, you can make changes in the law that certainly can discourage bad decisions. Keeping our helmet law would, I think, encourage a good decision. But you think about those little girls and boys that are laying there, wishing they had a mom or dad to tuck them in.
Senate Bill 549 to remove the state's helmet law for motorcyclists failed on a 15-19 vote. Members in the House today took on two reoccurring issues this legislative session, substance abuse and education. House leaders have continually pushed legislation to increase the penalties for drug traffickers this session, but also bills that give local school systems more flexibility. Liz McCormick reports.
While lawmakers have considered several bills this session aimed at punishing drug traffickers and dealers, House Bill 2428 is about recovery. The bill would establish a special fund to collect donations from the public and any appropriations the legislature can offer in the future to establish more substance abuse treatment facilities in the state. Democratic Delegate Phil Eisner from Randolph County spoke in favor of the bill. He says he's glad the body got to vote on a bill like this session.
We spent a lot of time this session passing bills that will punish the dealers, the people that are bringing the drugs into our state, and I've sponsored and voted, or co-sponsored and voted for several of those bills. But I am so encouraged that we are now trying to attack this problem from the other side, and that is to deal with the users that have got caught up in this. And every one of us probably has a friend or a family member that's been there.
Republican Delegate Marshall Wilson of Berkeley County also spoke in favor of the bill because it doesn't force the state to put money into it.
This is a way for us to build the framework that allows for this to happen and at the same time allow for our people, our communities, to get involved and engage in this and support it themselves. This is fantastic. And I'm really looking forward, Mr. Speaker, to engaging in my community and raising funds for this program.
House Bill 2428 passed 99-0 and now heads to the Senate. Another often visited issue this session has been over local flexibility in public education. But House Bill 3080 would require every social studies classroom in the state, both public and private schools, to teach about the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution during the week of September 11th. Some members of the chamber saw the bill as a mandate for county school systems and was met with opposition from several Democrats. Democrat Robert Thompson from Wayne County is a high school civics teacher, and he spoke in opposition to the bill.
I want us to rely on the teachers in this state who are already doing what they're supposed to be doing and who are already teaching the children of this state why it's important to be an American citizen and why it's important to be a West Virginian and what happened on September 11th. We don't need more bureaucracy coming from this Capitol to tell our teachers how to do a good job.
Delegate George Ambler, a Republican from Greenbrier County and a social studies teacher, spoke in support of the bill.
To have this a week of to emphasize American history in the the mere fact that we're debating something like this is ridiculous. America is what it is. We are telling people that. We are telling you forever. This bill is a good piece of legislation. Why not emphasize it a little bit?
The debate over House Bill 3080 went on for nearly 2 hours, but after several floor speeches, many of the opposing votes switched, including Delegate Thompson's. The bill ended up passing 97-3 and heads across the rotunda to the Senate for further consideration. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.